Welcome to the Three Martini Lunch. Grab a stool next to Greg Corumbus of Radio America and Jim Garrity of National Review. Three Martinis coming up.
Very glad you're with us for the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. And Jim, our good news, and our crazy news actually, is connected to the war between Russia and Ukraine. And the good news is really good, and hopefully it continues. The Ukrainians, over the past couple of days, launched a major counteroffensive against Russian forces. And the good news is, it seems to be working. Here's Richard Engel on NBC News referring to a map that he insists was not classified, showing that these large red Russian pockets were getting chipped away at by blue progress, which is Ukraine on the map. So since you can't see it, you kind of need that to know that as he explains this. But he says that there's a lot of optimism on the Ukrainian side that this is going about as well as can be expected. And they obviously hope it continues.
But what's interesting about this map is all of these blue spots, and there's quite a few of them. These are all areas that have been captured by Ukrainian forces, recaptured from Russian territory or from Russian troops just over the last 48 hours, with many of them, particularly here in this sector, over the last 24 hours. And this, they say, is the biggest counteroffensive that they've seen since the start of the war, the most blue that they've ever had on this map, and they're finding it very encouraging.
And of course, one of the reasons it's encouraging is because they're pushing back that perimeter around Kyiv, and so the Russians are now further away, which is obviously good. Also, Ukraine reporting that it struck the Russian-occupied port facilities in the Azov Sea city of Berdyansk Thursday, setting off a large fire and destroying a Russian ship as the war entered its second month. The port has become a major logistics hub for Russian forces, and footage from the area showed smoke billowing from the berthing area, and Kyiv said the attack destroyed the Russian Navy landing ship Orsk. So, Jim, we'll take good news on the battlefield and beyond wherever we can get it. And so the Russian performance thus far has been thankfully underwhelming, and this counteroffensive seems to be at least meeting, if not exceeding, expectations.
Greg, for a couple of days now, the Ukrainians have been saying, we're launching our counteroffensive. This is going to be a big deal. We're going to drive the Russians back. And, you know, every army that is in this kind of situation, every government that's in this kind of situation is going to want to say, we're not knuckling under, we're winning, things are going great, et cetera. There's always a chance that this is spin. And we should point out that Engel is getting that from Ukrainian military sources, Ukrainian municipal sources. Obviously, so there's a possibility, all right, maybe this is, certainly this is the Ukrainian side of the story. This is how they see it. And they can point to these spots on the map and say that they're winning. I think what's significant is you're now seeing NATO allies saying they're seeing the same thing. Russian forces were 25 to 30 kilometers away from the center of Kyiv, and now they're in the neighborhood of like 55 kilometers away from Kyiv. So that's almost doubling the distance. They've lost quite a bit of ground. By the way, just for this, you know, separately, I love the way that Ilya Ponomarenko of the Kyiv Independent characterized it. You've got a couple pictures there, and the headline is, Russian landing vessel Orsk is now going to meet SpongeBob. A very good way of putting sinking into that. And separately, again, you know, NATO does not have a perfect vision of all this stuff. We talked earlier in the week about the report from a Russian pro-Kremlin tabloid that said that nearly 10,000 Russian soldiers had been killed. Right now, NATO senior military officials are telling the Wall Street Journal the number of Russian casualties is somewhere between 7,000 to 15,000 killed. Then you throw in the number of wounded or taken prisoner or missing, it gets to about 40,000. Oh, by the way, they also think Russia may have lost 10% of their equipment. These numbers are really, really bad for Russia. And this is a testament to a furious and hellacious counterattack from the Ukrainians. And so now the idea, like, look, first of all, the scenario of the quick Russian victory is looking unlikely. And now maybe the possibility of a slow, gradual, bloody, but, you know, just bludgeoning the Ukrainians into submission week by week, month by month, that may not be in the cards here for Russia. So this is, you know, by that standard, this is about as much a good comeuppance as we can hope for the Russian forces there. Obviously, you know, continuing reports of bad morale, frustration, troops abandoning their posts, abandoned equipment, stuff like that. So look, you know, obviously all of this stuff could change in a New York minute, but if you wanted to see the Russian military fall flat on its face, Putin get embarrassed and to see free Ukraine continue. This is going pretty well. This is going about as well as you could hope. We will see how things shake out for the, you know, coming days, weeks, and months, though.
Yeah, it's going to be a long fight. Certainly a lot longer than we thought it was going to be a month ago. I believe today is exactly the 1 month anniversary of the Russian invasion. And so the fact that the Ukrainians are still standing, they're still fighting. Obviously, millions of people have been displaced. We're doing, I think, what we can weapons-wise and so forth. Zelensky obviously wants more, but there are certain risks certainly that go along with that. And so hopefully we're helping him put together this counteroffensive and to push the Russians back. So you mentioned morale with the Russians, and we'll get to that in the crazy martini, because it would appear in a number of different ways. Morale's not good, both on the battlefield and even beyond. But Jim, in the meantime, more good news to talk about, and that's the quality products available from our sponsor today, Quip. Look, brushing teeth is critical to your overall health. Yes, your oral health, but good oral health makes a big difference with the rest of your overall health. Plus, you just feel better knowing that you've got a good smile and just healthy gums and teeth. It really does make your life better. And so Quip, of course, has the fantastic brushes and the floss. And it even tells you as you brush when to switch sides and tops and bottoms. And it couldn't be easier.
The Quip electric toothbrush is loved by more than 7 million mouths. It has timed sonic vibrations with 30-second pulses to guide a dentist-recommended 2-minute clean. It's got a lightweight and sleek design, enjoyed by both adults and kids, with no wires or bulky chargers to weigh you down. It comes with a multi-use travel cover that doubles as a mirror mount for less clutter in your bathroom, and reusable handles with a range of sleek metal hues, including the best-selling all black and all pink, as well as bright plastic colors sure to make a pop to your bathroom counter. Are you on top of your brushing? You can upgrade your Quip with a new smart motor to track and improve your brushing with the free Quip app, and you can earn amazing rewards like free refills, products, Target gift cards, and more.
We have used Quip in our house. I told you a long time ago, the one they originally sent for me that my wife stole and used and loved, and then they sent me one, and I loved it, and now my kids have them, and brushes we actually bought once they came out with the Quip brushes. Mrs. Corumbus was listening to the podcast and said, hey, that's a great idea. Let's get them for them. Kids absolutely love the Quip toothbrushes. So if you go to quip.com/martini right now, you'll get your first refill free. That's right, your first refill free at getquip.com/martini, spelled getquip.com/martini. Quip is the good habits company. All right, Jim, on to our second martini. Now, it's not a bad martini. I said we had good, bad, and crazy. We actually have good, and crazy, because the second good martini is that Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas appears to be doing fine. And that's literally all the news we have on this. TMZ, of all people, caught up with Supreme Court Justice Stephen Breyer outside of Cafe Milano in Washington, D.C., popular spot in the nation's capital. And they asked him a couple of things. They asked him what he thought about the confirmation hearing so far. And he completely demurred, saying, that's their affair. I've had mine. So he's already got the beach and the golf course in front of his mind with just a couple months left in his term on the high court. And then he was asked how Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas was doing, and he simply said, he's fine. Breyer was talking through a mask, so it wasn't a very long or detailed conversation. As we reported on Monday, Thomas was admitted to Sibley Hospital in Washington, D.C. late last week due to flu-like symptoms. Turns out he had an infection, which doctors, according to the Supreme Court statement from Sunday evening, seemed to be treating effectively. They said the symptoms were abating. The Supreme Court would not say, as of, I believe, yesterday, whether Thomas was still in the hospital, but with Breyer saying he's fine, would at least suggest that whether he is in the hospital or not, he's clearly headed in the right direction health-wise. So, Jim, always good news when we hear that certainly Clarence Thomas is on the mend.
Greg, this is one of those news items I can find a good, a bad, a crazy angle on each one of them. Obviously, the fact that Justice Thomas is fine, or at least that's what Breyer is telling us, that's about the best news we could possibly hope for, and you know, hope he makes a quick recovery. I think it's bad, or at least a little bit unfortunate, that you know, there was that initial assessment that he'd been hospitalized, but based on the he should be out in a day or two, I think that would have been like Tuesday night, and we've heard nothing, at least as of this recording on Thursday morning. That's obviously been in the hospital a day longer than expected, maybe 2 days. And the Supreme Court didn't have any updates yesterday. And I just kind of feel like, considering Thomas's importance, and let's, you know, obviously there's some Americans who aren't fond of him, but a lot of us are, and we want to make sure he's doing okay. And so I don't know, I understand the annoyance, I understand that he wants to keep his privacy, but all in all, for obvious reasons, we want to know he's doing okay, and we want to know that he's going to be back on the bench, you know, hopefully sometime soon. So I can't begrudge him his privacy, but I do feel like, you know, for a figure of this importance, you can't begrudge anyone else for being really concerned, really interested. He's getting up there in years, and they say it's not COVID, but, you know, as you get up there in years, any infection can become a serious issue. And finally, there is a crazy angle to this, Greg, because it all began with TMZ was outside Cafe Milano and asked of Stephen Breyer. So TMZ's on the Supreme Court beat. Greg, who saw that coming?
They'll talk to anybody outside an airport or a club in L.A., but yeah, that's kind of odd. I've seen videos from them talking to politicians when they land at Reagan National, but I've never seen them just trolling downtown cafes and restaurants. So I guess the pandemic really is over, even though Breyer was there with a mask. So if you can just chat people up on the street, that's probably a good thing, right?
You could probably get a lot of good, useful information, or if you just establish a bug at certain tables in Cafe Milano.
You're going to get a visit from some government agencies, some alphabet soup agencies, and they're going to be storming Cafe Milano and a bunch of other places.
They'll say, how dare you put listening devices there? That's our job.
That's right. All right. Well, Clarence Thomas, I hope you are getting better, and some confirmation from the Supreme Court would be nice if he is still in the hospital or if he's still recovering at home. Get him some good bedding, even better bedding than he probably already has. Get him a nice pillow, get him some nice sheets, towels, mattress topper. All of it's fantastic. And right now, fantastic deal also on the MyPillow towel set. Six-piece towel set, regularly $109.99, now only $39.99 per set.
The MyPillow six-piece towel set is made with cotton grown right here in the United States. Now, some of the towels might feel good, but they don't absorb well. Or maybe they absorb well, but they don't feel good. They've got that lotion-y feel. Well, every MyPillow towel is made from proprietary technology that makes them highly absorbent and soft to the touch. Every set comes with two bath towels, two hand towels, and two washcloths. The sets are available in a variety of colors and sizes. The towels are machine washable, and they come with a 60-day money-back guarantee and a one-year limited warranty.
For a limited time, get the MyPillow six-piece towel set, regularly $109.99, for only $39.99 with the promo code MARTINI. Visit MyPillow.com/MARTINI or call 800-874-0104. You'll also find deep discounts on all MyPillow products, including the MyPillow mattress topper, MyPillow Giza Dream Sheets, and so much more. Get your six-piece MyPillow towel set for only $39.99 today at MyPillow.com/MARTINI. Or call 800-874-0104. MyPillow.com/martini. All right, Jim, on to our crazy martini. And as promised, we are back to the situation in Russia. We mentioned morale was bad with the forces. Mentioned just yesterday that Putin's climate envoy decided, due to his opposition to the invasion of Ukraine, that he's out. Not just out of the government, out of the country. He's gone. Unless Putin finds him. That could not be good. And then we also have a vanished defense minister, I believe. I don't think that one's voluntary, though. It could be a result of the less than successful invasion from the Russian perspective. And now Putin's yacht, the Scheherazade, has no crew. New York Times with the story, Russian crew members on a mysterious $700 million luxury yacht that U.S. officials say could be owned by President Vladimir Putin of Russia abruptly left their jobs and the Tuscan coastal town where it is undergoing repairs a couple of weeks ago amid scrutiny of the vessel, local union leaders and workers say. The crew members had been fixtures in the small town of Marina di Carrara since the fall of 2020 when the 459-foot-long yacht arrived at a dry dock less than 4 months after being built. No owner has been publicly identified, but I guess there's reason to believe that it is connected to Putin. This week, the research team of Alexei Navalny, the Russian opposition leader, published a video in which it argued, based on a 2020 crew manifesto, that a dozen of the Russian crew members either worked for or had a connection with Russia's Federal Protective Service. And the team drew the conclusion that the yacht must belong to Mr. Putin or some of his closest aides. So, Jim, this is more comical than consequential, I would probably argue. This is a private yacht somewhere on the Tuscan coast rather than on the battlefield in any sort of significant way. But it does show potentially that we got a Russian leader who's got less and less support by the day.
Listeners, before I go deep into my answer, I just want you to take a moment and appreciate Greg's exceptional pronunciation skills. From the Sherazad to the previous discussion of Berdyansk and the Azov Sea, which, by the way, you know, I thought it was Azov maybe, but no, like the Azores, but no, it's that's much more like the we're working our off pronunciation. Just phenomenal job there, Greg. I want to make sure you salute you. And you don't realize how much effort Greg puts into making sure he pronounces all this stuff right. I, on the other hand, will just wing it and hope that I get it somewhere in the ballpark. So the first thing that kind of jumps out of this is you thought there was a labor shortage bad here in the United States. Well, not even Vladimir Putin can find somebody to work on his yacht. That's when you know there's a really severe labor shortage. And I kind of marvel, you know, Greg, we've been complaining on, you know, because we're, you know, aging and we're Generation Xers. Oh, Generation Z, Generation Millennials, they don't have a work ethic. They're not committed to work through these their jobs. They'll just walk off the job. You know, it's really bad when you're willing to run the risk of walking off the job of working on Vladimir Putin's yacht. Right? You see what this guy does to dissidents. You see what this guy does to everybody else. There's a report that the defense minister is out and stuff like that. Walking away from a job on Vladimir Putin's yacht is really, you know, you almost have to admire the gumption for somebody who says, okay, that's it. I can't tie down the lines and swab the decks anymore. And then finally, I'm just kind of marveling, how is it, Greg, that there's a $700 million yacht in Tuscany and nobody is 100% sure who owns it? Like, they just kind of figure it's like, you know, vehicle registration, you'd have to have it registered to somebody. So, I mean, maybe it's front companies and various cutouts and stuff like that. I'm kind of surprised Putin doesn't have the philosophy I have with my friend who has a boat. Whenever I talk to my friend who has a boat, they talk about the enormous amount of upkeep and work and always cleaning it and always fixing it. And it's constant maintenance. In the end, if you someday want a boat or want to buy a yacht, dear listeners, and by the way, I hope, Greg, we don't someday have a yacht company as a sponsor on this podcast, because then you'll hear me change my tune really fast. But you don't really want to own a boat or a yacht. You want a friend who owns a boat or a yacht. That way you get to go out, you get invited, you go out, you get to enjoy the boat, but you don't have to do any of the work of maintenance or paying for any of the maintenance. So I figure that was Putin's arrangement. The idea that Putin chose to purchase a yacht. When I was writing about the oligarchs earlier in the week, the short version is when you see somebody, when the government seizes a yacht of some criminal, very often within 6 months to a year to a year and a half to 2 years, that yacht is in really rough shape because the government's like, hey, we're not doing any maintenance on this yacht while we're, you know, impounding it. We're not spending taxpayer money to keep this thing fine. And of course, the criminal or the person who's had it seized doesn't want to spend any money on maintenance because they can't enjoy it because the government seized it. So what happens is nobody takes care of it. And then within a while, it ends up being, you know, a very fancy luxury yacht that needs a lot of maintenance and is overdue for a lot of repairs and stuff like that. So all in all, I think this, you know, purchasing a yacht may be the second biggest strategic mistake that Putin has made in recent weeks. First one being the invasion of Ukraine, but, you know, that's, which is a lot bigger, a lot more consequential. Buying a yacht, shouldn't have done it, Vlad. What were you thinking?
Amazing. A public servant's got $700 million. I'm sure all that.
The Russian government pays a lot better than you think. Boy, you know.
459 feet. That's 1.5 football fields. That's a long boat. Anyway, Jim, I like your philosophy, though. Find somebody else who's got one. It's a lot easier that way. Jim, have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity, National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus, Radio America. Thanks so much for being with us today. Do subscribe to the podcast if you don't already, and tell a friend about us as well. Thank you so much for your 5-star ratings and your kind reviews. Please keep those coming. Big help to us. Get us on your home devices. All you have to say is play 3 Martini Lunch podcast. Follow us on Twitter. He's at Jim Garrity. I'm at Dateline_DC. Have a great Thursday, and please join us on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.
The mainstream media doesn't cover some of the most important news of the day. I'm Byron York from The Byron York Show. In my latest episodes, I discuss what Joe Biden's low poll numbers could mean with midterm elections around the corner, the door Mitt Romney is opening by accusing another politician of treason, and how the White House spin on inflation is known as the Putin price hike. Don't forget to download and subscribe to my daily No Chit Chat podcast to hear me expose and dissect the news of the day. Politics to public issues, I never shy away from the truth. Subscribe on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.